Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by Zoroastrazeneca's new brand of prescription painkiller designed to get you through the headaches brought on by reading your holy texts and trying to apply them to the real world. So next time you're banging your head against the Bible, the Talmud, the Quran, or whatever antiquated revelation you prefer, take some orthodoxycontin and turn off the parts of your brain that ask questions. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
You guys did a great job.
Yeah.
And I guess you got to thank the Lord, right?
Yeah.
Do you thank the Lord for that split-second decision?
I'm actually an atheist.
Oh, you are. All right. But you made the right call.
Yeah.
This is DC Webb from cwebsundayschool.com, and we did in fact evolve from filthy, albeit sexy, monkey men and women.
Thursday, it's May 23rd, and normally I put a joke here. I'm your host, No Illusions, and from prohibitively expensive New York, New York, this is The Scathing Atheist. On this week's episode, Texas lawmakers refuse to declassify the penis manual. We'll figure out what's making those Hasidic kids look so cool, and Heath will join us to offend Christians, Jews, women, Muslims, blacks, people from Singapore, and John Lennon fans. But first, the diatribe. I have nothing against raisins. They're compact, nutritious, vitamin-rich, and tasty. I eat them when I hike, and they actually make bran appetizing. I really like raisins. When they're in a box of raisins. When I don't like them is when I'm eating a Danish or a cinnamon roll or something, and for the first three or four bites it's raisin-free, and then all of a sudden, and without clearly distinguishing itself from a dead insect, I'm chewing on some little rubbery, wrinkled morsel of undeniably bug-like dimensions. Similarly, I've got nothing against Christians when they come in a box clearly marked Christians. I can't imagine an atheist walking into a church and saying, "Hey, what's all this talk about Jesus, guys? Can't you see you have guests?" Like every single atheist I've ever met or interacted with, I support the right of all people to believe and worship whatever the hell they want to, as long as they're willing to shut up about it during grown-up time. As long as it doesn't get all mixed up in decision-making that affects others, you can spend your Sunday mornings being loved by whatever fictional character raises your pup tent. But if people constantly showed up at my door to ask what brand of raisins I preferred and whether I was prepared to accept their brand as the only true raisin, I would hate the fuck out of those people. I'd probably start a podcast about what a bunch of assholes raisin evangelists are, and I'd probably start a YouTube channel, Twitter feed, Facebook group, and blog about it like I did for this show. Hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, say no more. My problem with both raisins and Christians is that they're subversive. They sneak in places where they're not welcome, they intrude on otherwise secular pastries, and they seem to think that they have a right to be there and be all raisiny whenever the hell they feel like it. I remember the families that would give out pamphlet ads for Jesus on Halloween, despite the fact that it's a secular holiday by any reasonable standard. I remember finding a Bible passage on some toy my unsuspecting atheist uncle gave to me. I remember finding Jesus ads on school handouts, and I remember finding whole fucking sermons in the middle of Snoopy cartoons. Christians would look at this list and see nothing subversive about it at all. What's wrong with giving out information about Jesus? What's wrong with putting our worldview out there? What's wrong with a message about Jesus in the middle of a cartoon about a Christian holiday? Of course, it would never occur to him to flip the question on its head and imagine Linus taking a couple of minutes to refute Pascal's wager during a Thanksgiving cartoon. But it's a secular holiday. Shouldn't it have a secular message? They'd go apeshit if I started handing out little pamphlets of Dawkins quotes with my Halloween Snickers bars. Fox News would probably be at my door by November 2nd asking why I hated America. They'd be apoplectic if some toy manufacturer snuck a few sentences of David Silverman's talking points on the package of their toy, but they seem incapable of understanding why this stuff pisses me off. Instead, they just talk about the angry atheist and the Jesusless depression that must fuel my animosity, all the while they sneak their stupid little pamphlets into phone booths and subway stations and restroom stalls and airports and all manner of places we wish we didn't have to go, and they see nothing wrong with that at all. And of course they don't. They've been programmed to believe that we're all going to hell, so if they've got to corrupt a parent's autonomy to raise their child how they want to, that's a small trespass if the result is saving a soul. It's despicable to annoy secular people on their deathbeds with last-minute attempts to wash their dirty brains, but to them it's virtuous. A soul lies in the balance. How could they stand silent when he was so close to the end, and he wanted nothing more than to not be harassed by used afterlife salesmen so he could enjoy the remaining hours of his life? Sadly, there's very little secular equivalent to this. Hell, we're not even allowed to put up billboards verifying our existence if the nearby community really, really needs it. Our existence, after all, challenges the most pervasive and some would say most important fiction at the heart of the religious virus, the notion that we need God. If we set out to devangelize, we might not need pamphlets or slogans. We might make some headway just by knocking on doors and telling people, I just wanted to let you know that at some point I'm going to die and I'm okay with that. I fully recognize that there's no post-mortem magical Six Flags waiting for me, and yet I live an inspired and contented life. And until we can make them understand that, I'm going to stay vocal. I think reason is worth standing up for, and to be perfectly honest, I think it says a lot about my worldview when it can grow and thrive despite not having any computer-generated anthropomorphic talking vegetables to sell it. You know, if Jesus really wanted to impress me with his whole suffering for my sins thing, they'd have nailed him to that cross by his scrotum.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast and bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is my fellow stickler about the use of reason, Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to stickle the unreasonable?
I majored in stickling the unreasonable.
So, a liberal arts degree, and now you bartend.
Well, I provide free psychiatric advice and often prescribe beverages that I serve on premises, all whilst constantly wiping down the flat surfaces in front of me with a rag. Some call that bartending, I suppose.
So it's kind of like being a priest, except that people are adults and they know in advance that there's alcohol in their drinks. Anyway, in our lead story tonight, we once again have to talk about how stupid Texas lawmakers are. In response to unambiguous evidence of the whole and overwhelming failure of their 18-year campaign to keep kids safe from the dangers of sex by pretending it doesn't exist, Texas lawmakers have doubled down on their Jesus-flavored approach to sex ed.
Ah, yes, the dataphobic ostrich approach.
Now, in defense of ostriches, I should point out that that's an urban legend. Unlike Texas legislators, ostriches don't actually stick their heads in their own asses.
Well, if you read the fine print on the Texas state charter, you'll find it clearly stated that ignorance is an inalienable right guaranteed by a separation of truth and state.
Clearly. And as an example, we'll travel back to a more innocent age when we thought that the lowest the Die Hard franchise would stoop would be the one with Samuel L. Jackson in it. An antiquated time when we still thought that Mel Gibson was pretty cool. A bygone era when people still rewound shit. And a time when Texas high school students were still being taught a sensible curriculum with regard to sex ed.
They should have given us more practice with the opening the condom wrapper thing. That was definitely
that
not focused
helped.
On. That would have helped a lot more than whatever they were telling us. I don't even remember. And by the way, if you're looking for more reasonable progressive policies and you're using Texas from 2 decades ago as your model, not a good sign.
Yeah, but as bad as things were then, they could always be made worse by putting George W. Bush in charge of your state. And in his first year as Texas governor, lawmakers passed groundbreaking legislation that replaced the See Dick Dick Jane Spot curriculum with a more of a I'd love to fuck you, Barbie, but I have no genitals approach. In fact, this law actually gave the individual school districts the right to forego sex ed altogether and opt for the la-la-la, I-can't-hear-you-based syllabus.
Well, if a sperm fertilizes an egg, but there's nobody there to understand it, who pays for the abortion? I mean, these are the philosophical questions that need to be asked before we even consider teaching about things like peonies and vaginae in schools.
And now, 17 years after the new law went into effect, the results are in, and they're 17, so the results are fucking pregnant because they didn't know how a condom worked. Texas went from bad to worse over that period and now ranks among the 5 worst states in every relevant teen pregnancy statistic. So guess how Texas lawmakers have decided to tackle this disturbing problem?
More Jesus?
More Jesus. They've decided that despite the fact that abstinence-only education has been shown to be significantly less effective than comprehensive sex ed, which, by the way, still mentions that not having sex is a good way to not get AIDS, they've decided that the real problem here is that their approach to human sexuality isn't Bronze Age enough. Enter SB 521, which looks to further restrict students' access to sex ed with requirements that parents fill out forms to approve teaching their kids that people have genitals. It also seeks to ban any material or speakers from Planned Parenthood, which basically guarantees that it'll become a law.
Wow, they've still got some Jim Crow v. Wade laws down there, don't they? Jesus.
And in other bullshit Bible Belt bulletins, the state of Georgia has also recently doubled down on stupidity. This story starts with our intrepid hero, former president of American Atheists Ed Buckner, checking into a state-owned cabin in the Amicalola Falls State Park and finding a Bible there.
This is worse than when Al Sharpton found that Subway ad for cotton white-hooded sweatshirts.
I knew that was going to be bad as soon as you said Al Sharpton. Anyway, as this is a state-owned park, Buckner politely informed the Park Service that state-owned cabins shouldn't really endorse a particular religion, and they said, holy shit, you're right, are bad, and they took the Bibles out.
That sounds impossibly reasonable. There's no way the state of Georgia left it at that.
Absolutely. And as so often happens in these stories, along comes a spider in the person of Governor Nathan Deal, who ordered the Bibles returned to the cabins, arguing that they didn't put the Bibles there because they were Bibles, but rather because they were free. And doggone it, we'd have let anybody put books all in them there cabins if they'd given some to us.
Even nonfiction books that contain dangerous factual material? Doesn't the South have book-burning firemen to prevent stuff like that? Right when you're thinking it's about time for the second rape joke, right? I go with a curveball, give you the Fahrenheit 451 reference. Nobody sees it coming.
So yes, this fucktard actually told the former president of American Atheists that they'd happily accept any freely donated literature for use in their state-owned cabins, and it just so happened that David Silberman had some Madeline Murray O'Hare, Ibn Warraq, Hitchens, and Dawkins lying around, so I'm sure that the governor will be happy to stack all that shit next to the Bibles and then tell his constituents that it's okay because the copies of the God Delusion were free. And in At Least You Don't Live in Saudi Arabia news, that nation's senior religious leader has recently added Twitter to the long list of possible perils for your eternal soul. Last Wednesday, top Saudi cleric, head of the Saudi religious police, and guy with way too damn many names, Abdul Latif Abdul Aziz al-Sheikh, declared that Saudis who use Twitter forfeit their rights to Muslim heaven for doing so. He warns that whatever the hell he says goes, and he says Twitter equals hell, so don't use Twitter.
He's kind of got a loose acronym for Allah's going in his name, I guess.
Oh, nice, there. Nice. I didn't notice that.
I'm pretty sure there's a shitty pun in this story, though. Hold on. Hold on. lots of hash, no more tags.
I think it'd be okay as long as you tweet at Mecca.
Well, they can't be happy about Muhammad having accounts on Instagram and Pinterest at this point.
Well, in the Mullah's defense, I think what really pissed him off is once they put the line breaks in, you could probably ASCII art Muhammad.
Twitter's probably getting bumped because Halliburton's new social media site, Cloud E-Arabia, has an exclusive contract.
I have to point out, though, in all seriousness, isn't it remarkable how often God happens to be pissed off about whatever most immediately threatens the unencumbered rule of the theocratic government? This is apparently only the latest in God's repeated condemnation of Saudis using Twitter.
Well, you know, tweeter's gonna tweet. I guess this is just one of those times when God is powerless. Weird.
Yeah. And in a sarcastically rare case of money collected for God being misused, we'll travel all the hell way to Singapore, where megachurch founder Kong Hee is on trial for embezzling $40 million of God's money to support the failing career of his wife, Z-list pop star Sun Ho.
The Pop-Tart will not face charges, I hear, and is using the excuse, in general, that the enormous expenses went toward creating music that glorified Christianity.
Oh, well, that makes it okay.
Of course it does. Of course it does. Singapore's Yoko Ono refused to comment as she was too busy plotting to have her husband murdered outside the Dakota building on Central Park West to fund the next godly album.
And before you send emails, I should point out that it will officially stop being too soon to make John Lennon jokes at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on February 11th of last year. So anyway, Sun Ho, known sporadically as the semi-hot Asian chick in that one Wyclef Jean video, and back home as Singapore's official least admired personality of 2012, she is apparently now directly in charge of the church's finances since all the people that were embezzling money for her are under indictment.
I can't help but wonder why you need to be a pop star if you can convince Christians to give you $40 million in the first place.
Right. And from the I was just thinking those Hasidic Jews looked hip file, a Brooklyn yeshiva recently sent a letter home to parents warning of the dangers of modernity represented by self-indulgent evils like thick-framed eyeglasses.
Disastrous.
The letter read in part, quote, "We are asking that everyone buy simple glasses. The yeshiva will not tolerate thick plastic glasses. Thick frames give the child a very fat look."
Yeah, it's probably the hipster glasses that are at the root of the physical appearance situation in Hasidic communities.
Oh, Jesus.
Because if you're about to say It's generations of inbred recessive DNA. You are an accurate racist, which tends to be received as the worst kind of racist, in my experience.
Is it still anti-Semitic if you exclude Reform Jews, though?
You're right. It's actually not. Hasids are the N-words of the Jewish community, very officially. Every time a Jewish person wants to go out and have a good time.
And for those of you who aren't familiar with that particular Chris Rock routine, fuck it. Heath is just really racist, I guess. Please be familiar with that Chris Rock routine for the sake of the joke. And on to legal news, the Supreme Court has decided to hear the case of the Town of Greece, New York versus Galloway. The suit challenges the town board's predilection for opening their meetings with what they call inclusive prayers.
Well, first of all, towns that far upstate don't count as part of New York. That's official. Also, I've never been to church. What exactly is an inclusive prayer? Is that like a circle jerk?
No, because in this case, only some of the people are getting fucked. Now, I'm no legal expert or anything expert for that matter, but I find it strange that this suit didn't follow the who gives a shit how inclusive they are their prayers line of argument, and it instead opted for the inclusive my ass defense. Apparently both are valid. The plaintiff alleges that the board basically opens every meeting with a Christian prayer until somebody bitches loudly in the press about it, and then they invite like two Wiccans and a Jew and then go back to the old boys club.
There's a joke here too. Wait, hold on. Two Wiccans and a Jew walk into a bar. Bartender says, get that Jew the fuck out of here.
Oh, God.
Can't even leave a foreskin for the tip. Hold on. I feel bad for singling out the Jews as bad tippers. That is mean. Christians, Muslims, blacks, Latinos, Europeans, and women are all great examples of other groups that are shitty tippers.
Now, the Second Circuit Appeals Court unanimously got it right on this one the first time around, but that incited a legal stercore procellarum that included legal briefs backing the city's mythology and incantations from as many as 49 members of Congress and 18 state attorneys general, spanning the political spectrum from the conservative wing of the Republican Party to the really conservative wing of the Republican Party.
Well, as long as the party remains hijacked by Christianity, they won't even allow themselves to be reasonable adjacent. The moment they sense moderate Republicans nudging up against logic, they have Rick Frothy Mixture of Lube and Fecal Matter Santorum publicly express an opinion. Speaking of which, was that Latin for shitstorm you used back there?
Yes, it was.
Nice.
Yes, it was. Thank you. I hoped you noticed.
And nice correct use of the plural of attorney general. Attorneys general?
Yes, sir. I got Smooth. That, too. And finally tonight, from the Give Me Modesty or Give Me Death department, we get a story so horribly stupid that it should be able to single-handedly end the debate about whether religion should ever be allowed to influence any decision about anything anywhere ever. This story comes to us from the Friendly Atheist via Pensacola Christian College via a morbidly misguided hierarchy of priorities. According to a former student and some representative of the college that was willing to admit this shit to Hemant Mehta via email, the school's stated policy in case of an emergency is for female students to dress appropriately for evacuation. They are asked to burn to death modestly before trotting out of a burning building showing a bit of thigh.
Well, in defense of the college, this is a proven method for outing witches, as far as I know. Although any women attending a college are already suspect.
Right, but don't they have scales and ducks in Florida? I mean, come on. Now, when friend of the show Hemant Mehta pressed the school's rep on this, they actually pointed out that the dorm rooms were arranged so that the closets were on their way to the emergency exits anyway, so it shouldn't be much of a problem to change. Well, what, feeling your terrified way through a smoke-filled chamber of burning death?
Aren't these women required to be clothed at all times anyway? It's like they've never heard of a shower burqa.
And on the shower burqa visual image, we'll close out the headlines. When we return, Heath and I will discuss the apex of all alliterative apologetics.
Did you see that chick who won the wet burqa contest?
Hello.
Hi, Joey.
That's not my name, Mary.
Okay, Jehovah.
You know, you should really call me God or Father Almighty or something.
Fine. Hi, God. Jeez.
So, to what do I owe the pleasure, Mary?
What you doing?
Well, I'm governing the universe, Mary. I'm ignoring African prayers. You know, these gay marriage proponents aren't just going to smite themselves, so unless you called about something in particular.
Well, yeah, actually, I did. I wanted to let you know I spoke to our son the other day, and he says he's got another one of those lists of pedophiles for you to forgive.
Yeah, I know. I saw his post about it on Facebook.
You know, I'm a little worried about him. He's put on a lot of weight lately.
Well, it's heaven, so it doesn't really matter. He's not going to have a heart attack or anything.
I know, but I worry. He still hasn't found a girl to settle down with yet, and he's turning 2014 soon, for Christ's sake.
Mary, I'm really busy here.
Funny, you're always really busy when I call.
Yeah, Mary, I'm God. There's a lot on my plate.
Why don't we ever just talk anymore?
Mary, I am not going to have this conversation with you again.
You told me you loved me, Joey.
Mary, I'm all loving. I told you I was all loving. I love everyone. It's in the fucking contract.
Ha, so you admit there's somebody else.
Jesus, Mary, there's everybody else. I'm God.
Don't you take your son's name in vain with me. I will not tolerate blasphemy.
It's not blasphemy when I do it. Look, I've got to go.
So when should I call you back, then?
You shouldn't call me back. Mary, we've been over this.
That's it. I'm coming over.
Do not come over.
I'm already putting my shoes on.
Mary, I'll phenomenize a moat or a dragon or something. Do not come over here again. It is over between us. I still love you because I'm all loving and I have no free will by the dictate of the logical impossibility of my existence. But that thing between us was just a thing between us. You have got to move on.
You used me, God.
I created you. I'm totally allowed to use you if it's part of my divine plan.
You know what? Fuck you and your divine plan. You are such an asshole.
No, actually, I am perfect in all ways, but that's fine. Yo, Adam.
Here I am.
You want that rib back? It's time for the Atheist Calendar portion of the show, a time we set aside to annoy the shit out of the listeners that live way too far away to go to any of the great atheist, skeptical, and secular events that we'll be highlighting, so we'll keep it brief. We'll start on June 15th with the SkepticalCon, which is really hard to Google because it's so damn clever that it's actually just spelled skeptical, but that being said, it promises to be a great time if you're going to be anywhere near Berkeley, California. Dr. Eugenie Scott will be there, along with DJ Grothy, Dr. Jill Tarter of the SETI Institute, and there's even going to be a remote appearance from one James Randi, though I think they'll be doing Skype rather than projecting him as a Help Me Obi-Wan Kenobi-type hologram. On the weekend of the 21st of June, we've got the SSA West, one half of the Secular Student Alliance's Bicoastal Conference Bonanza this year. This one will be taking place in Sin City, and there's way too much good shit going on there to squeeze it into this segment, so I'll just direct you to their homepage. Over the same weekend, we've got the Oklahoma Freethought Festival featuring Lawrence Krauss, Dale McGowan, Oklahoma's own Seth Andrews, and more. All I'm going to say is that with all the prayer mongers descending on them, by June 22nd, the state is going to be in dire need of an injection of secularism. That does it for June, but don't forget the big one, July 11th through the 14th. TAM is right around the corner, so if you haven't reserved your ticket, get that done quickly. We'll be talking it up a bit more on the next calendar segment, but if you need to know more now, you'll find a link to their homepage along with links to all the events discussed on this segment on the show notes for this episode. From time to time on this show, we like to set aside a few minutes to tackle some of the more common apologetics used in defense of Christianity. Tonight, Heath has rejoined me to tackle one such topic. Heath, what poorly formed insult to proper logic have you chosen for us today?
We'll be talking about the lunatic, liar, or lord concept.
Okay, and so for those who aren't familiar with it, this is basically an argument by reduction of sorts, right?
Exactly. The apologist argues that if Jesus existed and our record of him is correct, the only possible explanations are 1, he was insane, 2, he was deliberately misleading his followers, or 3, he was the Son of God, martyred to redeem humanity. He must be a lunatic, a liar, or the Lord. Then they try to work backwards with evidence that he wasn't insane and that he wasn't lying.
Okay, so the idea is if they can rule out him being full of bullshit or full of batshit, the only explanation left is that he truly is the Messiah.
Exactly.
Now, but you said yourself, this argument rests on the premise that Jesus actually existed and that our record of him is accurate, so it should really be the lunatic, liar, lord, legend, or literary license argument, right?
Not so fast. Within the confines of the mythology that Christianity is based on, one could also explain the appearance of Jesus by saying that he was actually the devil sent to confuse our love of God with all the Trinity crap.
So lunatic, liar, lord, legend, literary license, or Lucifer?
Or leprechaun.
What?
Jesus also might have been a leprechaun. Think about it. The theory goes that a person catches a leprechaun and wishes for a resurrected Jewish Messiah. That explains the whole story. But in that case, Jesus isn't really the Son of God, but more of a mystical leprechaun apparition type thing.
Now, let's be fair, though. We shouldn't have to consider that because Leprechauns don't exist.
Well, it's not that they don't exist. It's that there's no evidence for their existence.
What's the difference?
Look, there's no evidence that God exists and no evidence that he could have a human son and no evidence that such a son would be divine. No evidence that if he was divine, his martyrdom would somehow redeem humanity. So to truly employ this apologetic, you don't just have to rule out things that exist. You also have to rule out anything that's within about 5 degrees of not existing.
So what other kind of things must the apologist disprove, then?
Well, Jesus could have been a were-Jew whose powers were unlocked by the full moon, thus giving him the appearance of divinity. Or perhaps he was somebody who suffered some type of brain damage that leaves the part of the brain that knows it isn't the Son of God destroyed, but the rest of his brain intact. Or maybe he was one of David Icke's shape-shifting Illuminati.
So we'd have to add lycanthrope, lobotomite, and lizard person?
Right, exactly. Well done. Okay. And it's also possible that he was a time-traveling assassin that teamed up with a younger version of himself and went back to biblical times to escape from a price on his head and then pulled a switcheroo when they crucified the older him.
I have no idea what you're going for there.
Looper.
Oh, that Bruce Willis movie?
Yeah, obviously. Or maybe he was a teleporter that, while containing some magic powers, wasn't actually the Son of God. Or maybe he had some weird necrotic disease that made him temporarily appear dead. In fact, it's even possible that he's a bizarre early form of cloning.
And I'm guessing that's not all.
Well, I suppose he could be an actor hired by the Romans to fake a messiah. Or perhaps he was really a woman who loved Mary Magdalene and perpetrated the whole hoax just for some girl-on-girl action. Mary Magdalene was hot. Or maybe he was just a hippie who thought people would listen if he pretended to be the Son of God.
Well, if we're going that far, I suppose he could have been a liquid metal robot like the one in Terminator 2.
Good one.
I guess they could have filled his post-crucified body with helium, then he'd be lighter than air, and that'd explain the whole rising to heaven thing.
I think you're getting it now.
Or maybe he's just impossible as described by Christianity.
Well, let's not forget Luigi Mario from the Mario Brothers.
What?
Yeah, after accidentally taking a really fucked up warp zone or a whistle or something.
Well, I guess he does have extra lives. That would fuck him up. Okay, so what that means is that we're really dealing with the lunatic, liar, lord, legend, literary license, lycanthrope, lobotomite, lizard person, looper, leaper, leper, lab accident, lead, lesbian, liberal, liquid metal, lighter than air, logical fallacy, Luigi argument.
Exactly.
And that's all the possibilities.
Yeah.
All right, so to go
Let's
on...
Let's start with the letter L.
What?
Yeah, I always felt like if an apologist ever got past all that shit, they would have a lot more trouble with the myth, mirage, magician, moron, misrepresentation, machine, misleader, menace, manticore, meth head, marshmallow man, Martian, Mario, mushroom trip, messiah argument, but maybe that's just me.
Before we lock things down for the night, I did want to offer a quick apology. I was up late last week editing the show, and apparently I fucked the whole thing up, which I didn't realize until the following day when it was brought to my attention that episode 13 was only 29 minutes and 59 seconds long. We strive for consistency here at The Scathing Atheist, and our listeners deserve better than such lackadaisical oversight. To make up for this error, I've added 1 second to this week's episode, and beyond that, I simply throw myself at the mercy of the court. That's all that's left but to thank the people that made this episode go. I want to thank C-Web from C-Web Sunday School Podcast for providing this week's Farnsworth quote. Very interesting cast he's got going over there. Definitely worth a listen. You'll find a link to it on the show notes for this episode. I also want to thank Lucinda for giving me her best creepy stalker chick. Heath, of course, for being the second, third, and fourth wheel on this vehicle. And most of all, I need to thank Doug and April, this week's most exceptional hominids. Thanks to their unwavering bravery and enviable cunning, we have more money. Not everybody has what it takes to donate to this show, but if you feel that you share Doug and April's commitment to superhero-like compassion and justice, you'll find the donate button on the right side of our homepage. And if you want to help us, but you're saving all your money for a vintage replica Indiana Jones fedora, you can always throw us a bone by heading over to iTunes and leaving us a good review there. Remember, it takes 5 loyal listeners to counteract one Christian fart vapor who sees the word atheist and gives us a 1-star ranking. That does it for tonight's show, but we'll be back in 168 hours with more. If you can't wait that long, be sure to check out our erratically published blog and follow us on Twitter, because when I see that we have new followers, I feel imperial. We also put out clips of the show on YouTube, so if you want to share a segment with somebody who doesn't do the whole podcast thing, be sure to check us out over there. And if there's a segment that you'd like as a YouTube clip and we don't have it up there, let me know and I'll get right on it. Also, if you're on the Facebook, be sure to like us on Facebook, because we've only got about 100 likes and that's kind of embarrassing. And speaking of embarrassing, our Stitcher rank could use your help as well. So if you haven't downloaded the Stitcher app yet, get on that shit or I'm calling your mom. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact information on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission. That does it for tonight's show, but we'll be back in 168 hours with more. If you can't wait that long, be sure to...